come from Psalms 124. Psalms 124, and I'll start reading in verse 2. If it had not been the Lord who was on our side when people rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us up alive when their anger was kindled against us. Then the flood would have swept us away, the torrent would have gone over us, then over us would have gone the raging waters. Blessed be the Lord who has not given us as prey to their teeth. We have escaped like a bird from the snare of the fowlers. The snare is broken, and we have escaped.
Good to be with you this evening. I'm very thankful to be able to address this audience tonight. I appreciate Ryan's lesson this morning. In many ways, this is really a lesson that builds on his good lesson on anger. I want to talk to you tonight about winning the battle over depression. And maybe some of you who are college students would think, well, you know, that's something I'm never going to face. Can I tell you that a large percentage of God's people, if not even a majority, over time have had to face not only periodic issues with depression, but maybe even more chronic issues. And because you battle depression or you deal with depression does not make you unfaithful. We need to have a good understanding of what the Scriptures teach tonight about the times of life where we become overwhelmed. It's not a time to turn away from brethren when they struggle. It's something that we can come to better understand and know and be supportive of one another. As the Bible indicates, there are times we need to take the feeble knees and the hands that are weary and pick them up and carry them and help them. I think in years past, there was a time, I can remember as a younger man, I didn't want to have to admit that about depression. Well, I was a younger man, I just looked at others going, well, you know, that's kind of weird. Somebody having problems with their emotions, suck it up, you know. It's kind of like football coach, you know, get up there and, well, I understand there are times where sometimes we may need a slap in the face and move ahead, but we're dealing with something here far more serious, far more common. Let me talk to you about the common patterns of brethren who sometimes, Christians, who face depression. There are more serious issues that oftentimes are faced because of the kind of home that someone comes out of. I'm not going to make any blanket statements on why a certain person would experience a certain emotion. But I have seen this. Taking on what Ryan talked about this morning. I have found that young people, young men and women who come out of homes that are angry homes, have a very high percentage, high probability of dealing with depression in their lives. Many times depression and even buried anger goes through generations. I have learned when I'm dealing with someone who's really struggling with being able to just be functional in life and they're really dealing with depression, one of the first things I ask, tell me about the home you came out of. Now, we're not trying to condemn parents or blame parents for children. Not trying to do that. But I am saying that this is not an uncommon pattern at all. In Ephesians 6 and verse 4, I don't know all the reasons why the Lord tells us about this. I do see this in Scripture. The Bible says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. You know, a little phrase, don't provoke your children to wrath. I sometimes will see verses like that as a young man. That's interesting. But then as time goes on, I come to realize the terrible impact that if you have a home where parents are not being righteous, they're allowing anger to continue past the sun and they become illogical and unreasonable. And children end up coming out of a home where they do not believe they can talk to their parents honestly. And they learn to bury problems and not face them. That is the pattern that I speak of. And by the way, I guess I'm going to go off base here a little bit on the outline. One of the things that really impacted me early as a preacher, I was at Flint Hill in Bessemer in the 80s. And I had a mother come up to me and said, "My oldest son used to be a member here, but he doesn't attend any, and I'm afraid he may be a practicing homosexual." And that got my attention. And I already knew this lady and her husband. They had a terrible marriage. There was tremendous conflict and problems, and I'd been trying to help them, and they were responding to that. So I began to research the idea of male homosexuality. One of the common patterns is that there are issues in the home, particularly an angry and distant father, and a poor marriage. Now, in this case, this happened to fit precisely the type of home this young man came out of. Guess what happened? This young man got AIDS. And at that time, that's a death sentence. But guess also what happened? We got a chance to study with him and his roommate. And after several months of study, they obeyed the gospel. And then later, I got to know Ray. I would go with Ray, and we would eat ice cream and go to his house, and we would talk. And he told me about his background, and it fit precisely the background of this book describing this. And by the way, I would not wish that lifestyle on anyone. It's a hell on earth. And don't let people tell you that there's something gay about it. I hurt for people who are caught in that lifestyle. The average homosexual man will have hundreds of partners in a lifetime. The actual number is 1,000 in terms of some of the surveys that have been given. I don't want to go down that path too strongly, but here this man, you know the one thing that he wanted in his life more than anything? Was to have a relationship with his dad. And he did before he died, but that made an impression upon me. Uncontrolled anger in the home can have an impact upon children. There were other children coming out of that home, both a male and female. They didn't choose the path of homosexuality. There's a very small percentage that would go down that path, but both of them dealt with anger and depression issues. Okay, let's talk about depression. Depression is, if you just take the definition, it's a psychotic or neurotic condition characterized by an inability to concentrate, insomnia, feelings of extreme sadness, dejection, and hopelessness. Now, I'm not going to give you a psychology class tonight, but I will talk about Bible words. There are Bible words that describe this, like anxiety, despair, worry, and overwhelmed spirit. And depression, you just can't have one size fits all. By the way, I believe depression is an emotion to be experienced. I believe you can experience depression and be absolutely faithful. I believe it's one of the emotions that God has given us. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 2, it says there's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep. Time to laugh, you know, time to mourn, a time to dance. And so as we talk about depression is just an emotion. And we all have had times we've had the blues and we feel down and we're struggling with reality. But as I've already suggested to you, that depression oftentimes comes as a result of buried anger. And what I mean by this is that we get hurt and then we don't know how to let it go. We get hurt and we don't know how to forgive others or at least release the desire of vengeance. We become hurt and we don't know how to communicate to others. And burying it creates additional problems down the road. As one person says, you learn to bury your anger. If that is how you deal with it in life, let me assure you, there's going to be a resurrection. And oftentimes it occurs later in life. And why some people deal with depression that becomes more severe. As we look at Scripture, Psalms 23, the passage of the Lord is my shepherd. I believe it is possible for us, with the Lord's help through a living faith, to learn how to not let enemies or opponents or people that disappoint us cause us to go into some deep, dark hole. Listen to Psalms 23 and verse 5, speaking what the Lord can do for us. You prepare a table before me. Now look at this. In the presence of my enemies, you anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's possible. And so again, so many things right now as you're building your faith, how you deal with disappointments, how you deal with hurt, how you deal with even beating yourself up. There are things if you can learn now early what the Lord does and how to relieve yourself of these burdens and give them to the Lord. There's a lot of things that can be avoided later. Now we talk about short-term depression. There's various kinds of depression. There's short-term or periodic depression. Then there's chronic, very serious issues. One of the problems that in terms of short-term depression, by the way, I know you college students experience this, if nothing else for your schedule. And all, not getting enough sleep and working for a test and having all this class scheduled. You know, I'll tell you, you want to know what depression feels like? I think you know what it feels like. You can kind of just wear yourselves down physically and mentally. You know, I think of the great prophet Elijah in 1 Kings 19. He had, in 1 Kings 18, had won a tremendous battle against the prophets of Baal, but it was exhausting. It was emotional. I know he was hurt. He looked out amongst the people of Israel and he says, you know, take a stand for the Lord. If Baal is God, serve him. If God is God, serve him. And the people didn't say a word, not a word. And Elijah, I have no doubt, was hurt and angry. And then God sent down fire from heaven and the prophets of Baal were slain. Now notice in 1 Kings 19, Jezebel in verse 2 basically says this, so let the gods do to me and more so also if I do not make your life as one of them by tomorrow about this time. He was emotional. He was tired. He had done nothing but right. And now his life is being threatened by the queen of Israel. And you know what happens to Elijah? He breaks. Brethren, this can happen to any of us. And he breaks and he goes into the woods. Guess what he does? He becomes isolated. He isolates himself from others. He had unrealistic expectations of Israel. God knew what he was doing with Israel. But Elijah finally, he just goes, listen, here's the language of depression. Verse 4. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die and said, it is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my fathers. Have you ever preached your own funeral? I have. I have had those times. Oh, the world will miss me. Oh, how people will be sad when I'm gone. And, you know, and you go through this kind of a pity party. We've all done that. Now, what's happening when you're doing that? Just remember, try to be able to step out of yourself. You know what I'm having? I'm having a pity party. I'm going into depression. I'm not seeing things accurately. Elijah goes on, and it takes a little more time. God fed him. Elijah ends up in a cave, verse 9. And he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, I love this, very similar to the passage that Jonah was asked, you know, do you have a right to be angry? I like this one. What are you doing here, Elijah? Sometimes in life, we've got to step back. Here we are, isolating ourselves. We got all of these worries. Nobody loves us. Everybody's against us. Everything is being destroyed. And then we got to kind of think, now wait just a minute. Am I seeing clearly? And he goes on and says again, he says, I've been very zealous of the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and I seek to take my life. And you know what God does to Elijah? After he got a little rest, he says, get to work. You're not the only one left. here's, I want you to do this. And he got them right back into work and into relationships and to being used. By the way, we could end the lesson here and you probably got a good lesson on depression. Let's go a little further if we could. As we talk about depression, is that there's other levels of depression. Listen to me carefully here. There are kinds of depression, chronic depression, that you cannot snap out of just through counseling and through a faith. There are some aspects of depression that involve the physical side and that professionals are needed. I want to say plainly that as you talk about depression, there's different levels. Don't you take this attitude that, well, I will never have to see somebody to help me. Don't you say that. You could. Now, the more common areas are things that we can deal with. We can use our reason. I love Psalms 124. See, the goal of us is to we get hurt, we become very panicky, but we learn to turn to the Lord, to know Him and what He's done. The passage in your reading, beautiful passage. Verse 2, I poured out my complaint before Him. I declared before Him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path and the way which I walk. They have secretly set a snare for me. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. Give David credit. He was hurting, and he was alone. And by the way, he was in a cave here too. It's kind of interesting. Both Elijah and David, you know, in their times of depression, they were in a cave. But notice what he did. He kept going to the Lord. Lord, help me to see. Lord, help me. I know you will bless me. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to express to you my hurt. And as we had read earlier, the Lord brought his soul out of prison. The Lord took care of him. Let's talk about some dangers if we don't deal with depression when it comes into our life. One of the things about depression when it becomes a more regular thing and maybe even a chronic thing is that it can make us very undependable. And by the way, if you're struggling with depression and it comes and goes, then guess what? That's what you deal with. You know, I'm not saying that you're unfaithful and because you have regular bouts of depression, understand that you can be faithful and deal with very extreme issues regarding depression. But what you want to do is make sure your reality is not impacted by it. You want to make sure that somehow you do not let it take you away from being dependable. In the parable of the sower, one of the problems that arise amongst the seed is that there's some ground that when tribulation or persecution arises, that there's a quitting. There is a ceasing to function. There's a dying of the seed in this case. You know, when you deal with relationships, the temptation with depression is to withdraw. The temptation when you're depressed is to blame others and look at others, and everybody else has a problem, and you tend to justify yourselves withdrawing. Or you could become such a complainer, and maybe your reality changes. People may withdraw from you. There are some real challenges with people who need relationships. There's a great article that recently was out talking about one of the best ways of therapy in dealing with people with depression is that they connect with people. They need people. They need connections. But it's oftentimes the one who's dealing with depression, they start fleeing from the thing that they need. And I sure hope that within the church, we would be willing to help others and understand the nature, the struggle they have, and love them, and they would be great friends. And another issue, as we've already suggested with depression, is that reality can change easily. When someone can deal with depression, they can be very happy, and then a word is said or something happens, and they can take a 180-degree turn in how they view reality and how they view you. One of the dangers is that when somebody is chronically dealing with depression, you know who they're vulnerable to? They're vulnerable to those who flatter. Sometimes a person is desperate for relationships. They're desperate for approval. And somebody can come into a congregation and they can find those people and they start flattering them. And unfortunately, Romans 16:18 talks about some people who use those people for their own advantages. I've seen that happen. Yvette and I had a very close relative that dealt with chronic depression. And there was a time a church had a division and there were people wanting to get people on this side, and they found this one. Gave them flattery and attention for a while. Later they dropped them. And so there's a sensitive area with depression. Another thing with depression is sometimes you become very ego-centered. This is a common element. When somebody is depressed, they tend to focus on themselves. When somebody is depressed, you have a dear loved one who becomes depressed. Sometimes they can't even see you. There's a book that I know the Yvette and I, Reese, have used in the past, and we've actually bought some old copies of it recently, called I Don't Know Who You Are Anymore. A person could go into depression to the point where they no longer know how to see the needs of others and see the perspective of others and help them. It's a very difficult thing when people go down into this path. They only see their hurt. They only see the world as it relates to them, and that's not a happy way to live. You know, one of the dangers when you become ego-centered is when, again, you're blaming everybody else. You believe everybody else is a problem. You read about the Pharisee in Luke 18. You see a similar pattern here. I have a problem because of you. I have a problem because of this. I have a problem because of the church. I have a problem because, and just goes on and on. And they never see themselves. One other issue, and again, we're not going to cover every element of the outline, but one of the problems I've found when people have chronic depression, they have a hard time dealing with doctrine and dealing with discernment in doctrine. You may say, well, Larry, why would you say that? Well, Ephesians 4:13 is a passage where you see the instability of some. It says in verse 13, it says, till we all come to the measure of the unity of the faith, of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to a measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now notice verse 14. That we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things who is the head, Christ. You know, when you're dealing with depression, you don't want any more burdens. You already feel overwhelmed. You don't want to take on one more issue. And sometimes a person's in a church and there's a need to discern doctrine and they would rather just go flee from it. But let me tell you what happens when you do that. You may end up on the wrong side of questions. You may get pulled along by people, as I've already suggested earlier, that could manipulate you. You could end up wanting to go to churches, and there are plenty of them in this area that will never rebuke, will never deal with doctrine. Most of the Christians that I know of that didn't deal with their depression but denied it often ended up in these paths and left the people of God. Roman numeral 3. There's a real challenge as you're dealing with chronic depression. First off, don't be afraid to be honest about yourself. One of the big, big problems with anger and depression is denial. Some of the angriest people that I know in this life deny they're angry. I will tell you, when I talk about generational issues, some of my closest friends have had to deal with this. And they've come out of homes where, in one case, the father was not respected at all. The father didn't know that. And the father never really saw his problem with anger and the issues that were compounded in the home through generations. But I want to tell you, one of the best things you can do is say, hey, you know what? I've got some issues I've got to struggle with. You're not a bad person. Because you have, whatever the experience is, that you're dealing with depression. Whatever level it is, you are not a bad person for this.
But in order to get help, you don't want to continue to deny and to hide and to pretend everything's okay, and you keep that burying process, because let me tell you what happens to you. When you do that, you don't want to see yourself. And you can become a very toxic, hurtful person. And so, don't live in denial. And surround yourself with honest and understanding people. You know, as I think of David's mighty men, you know, some of his mighty men, like Abishai, I think came out of a family of hotheads. Abishai was one of the closest men to David, and he did well as long as he was around David. He wanted to kill Saul at one point. Oh man, here is Saul here. Here's his spear, and Saul's asleep. And Abishai says, look, it only take me one time. This guy's gone. 1 Samuel 26:8, and Abishai said to David, God has delivered your enemy to this hand this day. Now, therefore, please, let me strike him at once with a spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time. Now, here was Abishai. He's angry, righteous anger, for David having to flee from Saul. Notice what David said. David acted on principle. He was not going to let the emotion of the moment drive him. He acted on principle. Verse 9. And David said to Abishai, do not destroy him. For who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? You see, that's the kind of people you need to have around you. Who love you. Who care for you. You acknowledge you have issues. And you've got people you can trust that at sometimes they'll say, you know what you need to do? You need to calm down. You need to understand it's not as bad as you realize. And you need, here's what you need to do. You need people like that. Roman numeral 4. What do you do if you're in a home and you've got a depressed loved one? You know, I've known of family members who've had to intervene. Intervention's a challenge. There can be loved ones, they're not seeing it. It's doing damage. They're hurting themselves. And I want to tell you, that's a tough thing to try to get the family together and sit down and talk with someone and say, you need help. That doesn't always go well. I know that in our experience, we've had to do that at one time. And initially, there was anger. Initially, there was a lot of blowback. But then help was sought and thanks was given. Thank you, thank you. I needed to do this. And you know, there are times when somebody's depression is so serious, there does come a time where you say, you know, you need some help. We need to go further and maybe work with a professional as well as try to deal with Bible issues and relating to the issues you're facing. There are times in life that is needed. The worst thing that can happen, and here's what a family typically does. You don't tell you what we typically do in a home when there's somebody that's depressed and angry and they're not admitting any wrong. You know what a lot of people do? The children in that home, they have to learn to be quiet. And they oftentimes are quiet and gritting their teeth. But they know they can't say anything. Then there are others that they may be quiet, but when they're out of the realm of the depressed, they're angry. And sometimes they may show that anger toward the depressed person. Oftentimes you get in this anger cycle where anger is dumped and dumped another way. And it's kind of like, anyway, you need to help a person. You don't need to hate them. But let me tell you the worst thing you can do. The worst thing you can do when you're dealing with depression is to let the depressed person rule. They can be a merciless ruler. Someone who's dealing with that issue and don't want to recognize it, I'm going to tell you what, they may bite your head off if you try to communicate with them about a problem they have. It was an issue in one home I knew of that, you know, it's interesting when you talk about anger. Anger is not always somebody cursing at you, shouting at you. How anger is expressed depends on your personality type. If you're an aggressive person, you express your anger aggressively. If you're a passive person, you can express your anger passively. One person may stomp the dust out of the carpet, and you know they're angry, but there are other people, they may be angry and smile at you and say, I'm your friend, and they really don't like you, and they want to hurt you. There's some people that when they become angry, they just withdraw from everywhere, everything. There's one family I knew of once where the mother, if she ever got upset, she would go to bed for a week. And the family finally learned this issue. You don't tell her about these things. Don't do this. Don't communicate with her. And that person can end up ruling the home. I know of many homes I've seen where the depressed have ruled to the destruction of their children. We need to have the courage to try to communicate. In Mark 10:21, it says, Jesus looking at them, looking at him, this is the rich young ruler, loved him and said to him, one thing you lack, go your way, sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, and come and take up the cross and follow me. Can I tell you, if you're dealing with chronic depression, you got to know your limitations. Brethren, listen to me carefully. When somebody has a more chronic issue, this may be something you never, quote, fix. I can remember hearing people saying to their loved one that was in depression, I don't know who this person is. I want this old person back. You may or may not get that. And I want to say as well, as we're dealing with an issue like this, this may be something that you have to manage, that it doesn't just get fixed and somehow a person has no problems anymore. I don't normally see that. You can help them manage. You can live with understanding. In dealing with such an enormous question like this, brethren, I recognize there's so many other situations and episodes and things that we could talk about I can't possibly talk about in one lesson or a series of lessons. Really, the purpose of this lesson is to give us a feel for the kind of issues that are faced. Some of us are going to be more emotional, and we'll deal with that the rest of our life. And we need people to help us and be patient with us. And the press person can be a wonderful, wonderful asset to help others. But let's understand our limitations. We can talk. We can help. But the person's going to change. That's going to be between them and God. And I need to make sure I don't burn myself out trying to change one against their will. In Galatians 6:1, it says this, Brethren, if a man overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. And I want to urge people, as you're dealing with issues like this, it really takes mature people, patient people, spiritual people, are the kind of ones that are ideal to try to help a brother or sister when they're going through a time like this. Appreciate your attention. I had no idea that we would finish this quickly. I'm thankful that hopefully that we'll have some things to think about. And I want to extend the invitation. Beautiful thing about the invitation of the Lord is that one of the things that he tells us is that he wants to take the burdens from our heart. That the idea of conversion is, come to me, you who are weak and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. We come to God for forgiveness, but we keep coming to God because what he will do is he'll teach us how to think. He'll take burdens. We can give him the things that we can't do, that are beyond our ability. What he gives us is something we can manage and handle. I'm thankful we serve such a God. We'd love to see you serve him tonight if we can assist you in any way as we stand and sing.